This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Good morning, everybody. Halfway home on a Tuesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Lovely to be here with you this morning. We're having some temperature issues in here. It's cold.
Now it's warm.
And now it's warm. And then it's cold again. I don't know how to, I can't get right. Today is National Grouch Day, so it's perfect for me. I just complain about something, but I know that everyone, a lot of bad traffic out there, so thank you. It actually helps us when you're stuck in traffic. I don't want that for you because I hate to be stuck in traffic, but it helps you get to listen to Ben and Woods a little bit longer, so we'll try to entertain you as best we can. I'm Woodsy, that's Paul Reindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. We've got the Rawlings Gold Glove announcements that are coming out every 5 minutes. I will spare you having to go to your social media and look. No Padres have been nominated yet in any position.
They've gone through all the infield in both leagues for the three nominees at every position. And, I mean, not any giant surprises. The only glaring overlook, as usual, is Manny Machado, not even one of the three finalists for National League. Gold Glove third baseman.
I'll never understand it, but I watch him every day. So I know the defensive metrics and the range, OAA and all that. It is what it is, but I mean, you know, just watch him play every day and you tell me how valuable he is. But at any rate, not even nominated again. I will say, you know, Arenado is just, they just pencil him in every single year. Yeah. I don't know that he had the best defensive year either based on what I saw when I did see them play. Now I didn't watch him every day either. Ryan McMahon is a stud. He is a straight up stud.
He's a great player.
He is a great, great third baseman. Matt Chapman never disappoints at third base. Just always gets the job done. But Manny does it. He does it a little bit differently. For whatever reason, the numbers do not like that. So, but he's not nominated. We do think we all have the kind of the gut feeling maybe Jackson Merrill will be nominated.
Left field is next for the National League. They're kind of dropping him every 5 minutes. Don't think Jurickson's going to be nominated, although I think he has been nominated before. Then I would say the last two are the ones that are the most interesting. You've got Jackson Merrill, who had a tremendous season. I mean, can you imagine just to be nominated for a Gold Glove at a position you have never played before in your life?
Well, how about a Platinum Glove?
Possibly as well.
It happened to Fernando Tatis Jr.
And he had the injury and missed so much time, but... Yeah. You wonder if he will be nominated as well in right field. So we'll have those probably for you in the next 20 to 30 minutes as they drop them. We'll let you know if those guys did pick up the nomination for Gold Glove.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, to have Fernando move to right field, win a Platinum Glove his first year, to have Jackson move to center field, win a Gold Glove his first year would be pretty special.
Yeah, be insane, eh?
Probably going to be Patrick Bailey. Catcher for the Giants, really, really good defensively. We can go through. You want to go through them? I don't care. I mean, we're not nominated in the infield.
I don't need to go through all the American League Gold Glove candidates here, but we will definitely let you know when they drop if any Padres are in center field or
how many is Manny
or right
won?
Field.
Did he win one or two?
Did he win
a Platinum Glove?
He did win a Platinum Glove, I believe, in the American League.
That's pretty good,
which is great. I don't think his defense has just dropped off considerably.
Was he even nominated?
He's not even nominated.
He won a Gold Glove in 13, and then in 15 he won a second Gold Glove.
The metrics, the high end defensive metrics do not
like him.
Treat Manny very well, and I don't. It's kind of a range factor. I feel like he gets to balls that I expect him to get to. I mean, I don't see other guys necessarily making, third base, it's such a reaction position.
Oh, God.
And you can only dive so far. I mean, at third base, you don't generally make, other than that slow chop where you cut off in front of the shortstop, you're not making a ton of runs. Either it's sometimes he goes forward. He's really great at that play. Probably the best in baseball at the bunt or the chopper that's short and you got to barehanded to make that quick throw.
So hard.
He's the best in baseball at that. He's the best at baseball and grabbing the one down the line in foul territory and slinging that throw across. I can't imagine anyone does that better.
No.
So
is he so good that it hurts his value because they're like the metrics expect him to make these impossible plays?
I don't know. What is it that he doesn't do quite as well? The hard shots that are only like you know,
a dive
5 or 6 feet away. They're a dive that get past him occasionally because, I mean, he doesn't dive as quickly as some other people. Maybe. Is that where the metrics kind of ding him a little bit compared to some of the other players? I don't really know.
Even the smartest analytics guys in the world that we talk to, all of them, to a man or woman, say, yeah, defensive metrics are a little tough. They're a little tough to judge. They haven't really, you know, honed in on them yet. But yeah, it's hard for me to imagine watching him every day to think that he's not one of the best three in the National League. But again, I know I am severely biased, so maybe I'm not the best guy to ask, but I know what I see. You know, I know what I see, and I know.
This is Manny Machado.
I know that, JH6, he said, look, he just makes everything look so easy. You know, he makes everything look so easy. Maybe that hurts him. I don't know, but it's just the slickest, smoothest thing I've ever seen.
I would like to think that people who know baseball, and I would hope that the people who vote for gold gloves know some baseball.
Yes.
That making it look easy is a good thing and not a bad thing. Yeah. Do people not understand that? That is exactly what you're hoping to get out of a defensive player, a guy who makes difficult plays look simple. It's the best thing in the world defensively.
It's pretty amazing. But yeah, again, snubbed again. So he's going to continue to play good defense. That's what he does. But no, Quincy says, I love Manny. You guys got to watch some other third baseman out there. Dude, I just said, Matt Chapman is unbelievable at third. Unbelievable. Ryan McMahon as well. Arenado is obviously a really good third baseman. I don't know that he had his best year. I really don't. I don't think that. I think if you're putting those two, at least for a nomination, I think Manny probably beats him out this year. But Ryan McMahon, absolutely deserving. Matt Chapman, we said it when they signed him. I go, that's going to be.
I mean,
some
this year Manny
He's
played
really
a little
good.
Less at third, and you know because he DH was DHing more. Early yeah. in the season and you know recovering from the elbow.
Ke'Bryan Hayes
surgery,
is really so. Good. He also didn't get nominated. I don't know that did he play enough this year as well. I thought he was hurt at the beginning of the year, but he is fantastic as well. There's a glut of them in the National League.
And the left field nominees are Ian Happ, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., the Diamondbacks, and Brandon Marsh of the Phillies. So no Jurickson Profar, even though he's not a bad outfielder. I thought he played pretty decently out there defensively this
yeah.
year.
It's big catches, big throws.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's probably better players out there.
Jurickson does really well on those diving liners in front
yeah.
of him. You know, we saw a lot of visiting outfielders botch those plays at Petco Park, especially with the tough lights, you know, that kind of gets lost in the lights. And Jurickson, I think, made them pretty much every single time this year.
Yeah.
Credit to him. Didn't get the nominee for Gold Glove, but had a solid season defensively.
I'm really interested to see if Jackson's listed.
I am too.
Because he had a really good defensive year. I'm waiting.
And he only got better and better.
Yeah.
There really was never the learning curve moments that I was kind of expecting. He had, early in the season, he took some awkward routes toward balls, but still ended up catching them. And then as the season went on, he just got more direct and made more plays with a smaller catch percentage over and over again. You know, by the end, he was really making the most elite plays you can make in the outfield.
Cespedes Family Barbecue just tweeted about the shortstop position in the NL. Mason Wynn, Dansby Swanson, and Ezekiel Tovar, all the nominations. He said, reminder that managers and coaches vote on this, so it really speaks on how strongly of an impression Tovar and Wynn made on their opponents this year. It's good for him, man, that rookie, Mason Wynn. Getting the nomination at short, was not going to see one here in San Diego. Certainly, with Kimmy being not great when he was in there, and then Xander being also not great when he was in there. But hopefully, they can figure that out as we move forward. But yeah, we're just kind of waiting with bated breath to see if our beloved Jackson Merrill has been nominated.
Yeah, so probably sometime in our maybe next segment before the bottom of the hour, we'll get a few more nominees released in the outfield for the American and National League.
Are they going to find a way to give Shohei one? Somehow. If they could, would
Gold
they?
Gold glove designated hitter?
If possible, would they try to do that?
They might.
They could.
They might.
Still waiting.
Yeah. No, I don't think I think we probably should talk about other things
like
as
what?
Well. Well, I mean, whatever you want, Woods. It's your show, too.
All right.
I can sit in silence.
I can, too. Just waiting. The ump scorecard was out for yesterday's game. Thought the umpire was a little bit wheels off yesterday. It's a plus 0.36 runs for the Dodgers, as I expected. Had some really funky calls in yesterday's game. I think overall, I think the overall, though, the umpiring has been decent in the postseason. It's been pretty decent.
I think so. I mean, most of the ump scorecards from the Padres series, maybe all of them favored the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And I know that people, you know, that's going to, you know, there's an inherent bias toward the Dodgers. I don't know if there is an inherent bias toward the Dodgers. I do feel when it comes to certain teams, whether it's just how kind of the catchers maybe present balls or how, you know, pitchers' balls look to certain umpires, that they tend to do a little more poorly in those ump scorecards. You know, guys, you know, depending on if you're deceptive on the mound, that can also fool an umpire sometimes. How you catch it obviously makes a difference, unfortunately. But
it's been a big topic in the postseason. Some of the older baseball analysts and fans are not liking the one knee down. You're hearing that in almost every broadcast.
Huge discussion yesterday that John Smoltz,
he's
living on the broadcast. And I think it was Craig Calcaterra who got really mad on Twitter. Said John Smoltz said, hey, I know one knee down helps with the framing, but because of that, you know, pass balls are up. And Calcaterra said, but pass balls are down.
They're down.
You can't just make up facts because
Correct.
You don't like one knee down.
You don't like the way it looks.
You can't just say pass balls are up. I get it. You know, everyone makes up their own facts nowadays. Yeah. That seems to be very common, but it's very clear. You can look up like number of pass balls in baseball. Have gone down as catchers have started using the gone down to one knee. Now, when they do bounce off, it looks
way worse.
It looks like the catcher didn't get in good position because he was on a knee and he wasn't able to block it the way a catcher who is in a crouch is able to block it. But the numbers don't lie. The pass balls are down in Major League Baseball as the one knee technique has been proliferating among catchers.
And again, I just always go back to this. They wouldn't do it if it was bad.
That's a great point.
I mean, honestly, if somebody came and figured out, hey, you know, if you're a right-handed hitter, your right hand is on top of your left hand. If somebody came out and said, actually, you can hit 25 points higher and 10 more home runs if you reverse your grip, and here's why, and here's guys that are doing it. They don't do it just to be funny or cool. They're not lazy. Like, Francisco Alvarez isn't lazy. That's not why he's on one knee. They do it because there's data that shows it works. I don't necessarily love it.
Now,
if that's what works, they're doing it because it works.
Maybe John Smoltz thinks that, well, teams just think that framing is more valuable than blocking pitches, so they're willing to give up some pass balls in exchange for better framing. But they're not. The pass balls are down, not up. You know, and it's, you know, wild pitches, obviously, you're saving wild pitches. It's not necessarily a pass ball every single time.
Right.
But, you know, what he said is pass balls are up, and they're not. They're down.
They're down.
So you can't just simply blame one knee down catching and say that it's bad because
you can if you're on the you're broadcasting the biggest games of your seasons of your sports season. That's their favorite thing to do, is pick apart everything that's wrong with the game that they're presenting, and actually supposed to be kind of marketing, if you will, not talking about why everything is bad, but why everything is pretty cool and guys are really, really good.
All right, we should have the center field nominees when we come back. So take a time out. We'll come back.
Just riff for a minute.
No.
Be out in like a minute.
5 minutes. I believe AL comes out first.
But they came out 4 minutes ago.
Oh, the center field did?
Yeah.
Oh. You want me to keep waiting now? All right. Breaking news.
Center field's out?
It'll be out in a second. This American League center field.
All right, you're right. You're right. I thought I had.
Jaron Duran, Jake Myers, Dalton
Varsho. So, yes, according to their pattern, we trust the Rawlings Baseball Twitter account.
Oh, Jacob Young, Washington Nationals. Brenton Doyle, Colorado Rockies. And
Jackson Merrill.
Blake Perkins.
Blake Perkins.
You're joking.
No Jackson Merrill.
Right,
Padres shutout so far.
Wow.
Gold Glove nominees. All right. Well,
Pathetic.
We'll still talk to Jesse Agler. If
Pathetic.
They had a Golden Voice nominees for Major League Baseball, he would definitely be one of three finalists. Jesse's going to be joining us coming up here with Bennett Woods. Let's check traffic right now on 97.3 The Fan. Woods still in the torture chamber from earlier.
Yes.
Talking about the proposed cost of your 4-year-old's birthday party coming up.
1500 for one.
Bids are out.
600. Yes, I got proposals being sent in. He's four.
RFPs have been submitted.
The problem I have is my wife keeps asking him what he wants. And I go, you're the parent. Just make the decision. If you tell him we're going to, just say, we're doing
this
it
is
here.
What we're doing. This is you know what he likes.
What memories do you have from, like, clearly from before the age of five that you still have? I mean, I've got maybe like
a shred of something.
A shred of a glimpse of something.
Probably being abandoned by my father was one. Actually,
like,
no.
Was there a specific moment that you remember, though?
That didn't like, happen for me until I was like 12.
So you remember
like,
that. Really
remember
so it's
that.
Really raw for you. Your dad was around, yeah?
Still.
That's
yeah.
cool. That's cool.
Must be nice.
That's very cool.
It is nice.
Well, luckily, I have a...
But, I mean, what I'm saying is that this birthday party will likely not be something that Taylor remembers for the rest of his life.
You're literally
going to fade.
You're literally preaching to the choir.
Right.
I am the choir. You're not talking to the right person here. We've done all of their birthday parties pretty much at a park. You guys have been to some. You know what I mean? Like, it just is one of those things. Where
is there going to be a band?
Maybe. Dave Matthews Band is performing. I mean,
okay.
This is insane.
We had a first birthday party for... See, now I can't even remember which kid it was, but we had a band, we had the whole, it was a big, we had a keg.
So that's not a party for your kid,
no,
that's a party for you.
Because well, they're one, they're not going to remember.
Correct. So that's,
we went with the whole nine yards, we did.
We're doing that.
But it was at least in our backyard, we didn't have to rent out a space.
Right, but you had to pay a band.
We did pay a band.
Yeah. We've never done the, like, everyone come to our house and get hammered for our four-year-old's birthday party thing, because it's not really what we do, but, like, I don't know. I'm down to take, you know, for me, invite some people, and that's the thing. Do you have to invite all the kids from school? It's a whole thing, man. And my wife, the way she's wired is she has a hard time committing to one decision, and when she makes one, she's like, but what if we did this? She pitched me last night, what about Belmont Park? I go, okay, but it's a Friday, so you're going to make everybody drive down to Belmont Park for a 6 o'clock party for a four-year-old. I go, let's try to keep it as simple as we can. She's really not down with the simple party. So I don't know. Megan, your wife asks, are there renderings for the party? I'm sure there are. There's proposals out, PFPs or PDFs or whatever. Like we're getting people submitting bids. So if you have an event space, submit your bid and let us know what you're going to charge.
Well, let's talk to Eric Grupner and see if Petco Park is available for Taylor's fourth birthday.
Can you imagine? All him and his friends running around in center field.
Have a great time.
That one's going to be a little more expensive than $1,500, I would bet. I would bet. So, yeah, I want to keep it simple. Hooters, that's a good idea. Thank you, Big Nando 75.
I loved what you guys did last year with the Elsa.
Yeah, we did it at a
costume,
park.
Yeah. And then Jersey Mike's,
that's what he wanted. So, you know, this year he wants Sky Zone, but which is fine. But that's one of the ones, the big proposals, and you got to, you know, you have to invite the other kids, and you also don't want to.
Sky's on the trampoline park, or is that the skydiving?
No, that's the trampoline
park. 4 year olds.
That's why I was like, bold strategy, Taylor. I like it.
It's
a little daredevil.
The only problem with the trampoline park is every time I go there, I get violently ill afterwards. Yes. So expect me to be missing a week.
Is
of
that
work.
Because of the bouncing up and down, or
no,
you just feel like it's the
It's the 7,000 kids that scratch their nose and their butts and then get in the foam balls. And I can't not go in and play with them. So
I haven't been to a trampoline park in 25 years probably. And I can smell the dirty sock smell as soon as you open the door.
When you leave, like, you don't even know. Like, the shower I take when I leave there, and I love the place. It's great. The kids have a blast there. But when I leave there, I'm just like, it's just kids. It's just kids everywhere.
What about bowling?
We just took them bowling.
You did.
It didn't go
no?
particularly well.
All right.
No.
Still a little young?
Yeah. Still a little young.
All right. It is official. The Padres were shut out.
All right.
In all Gold Glove nominees. In right field, the nominees are Jake McCarthy, Sal Frelick, and Mike Yastrzemski.
Okay.
So no Padres nominated finalists at any position for a Rawlings Gold Glove this year, which actually does track with their defensive metrics, which were quite quite poor, which surprised me. Defensive runs saved and outs above average. Padres do not do that well, even though I would consider, as a baseball fan and someone who observes the team, I would have said Padres are a good defensive team.
You'd be wrong.
And I would be wrong.
Yeah, like, really wrong. What was their ranking out of 30 teams? 22nd?
Defensive run save, they were 22nd out of 30. They were negative at every position except a third base, I believe, and pitcher, where they were decent on the mound.
I guess when you say that, you know, other than center field, I go, okay, right.
They were negative in center field, too.
Which is crazy to me.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. But. Well, something to work on. You know, Mike Schilt, that's kind of what he preaches, you know, being good defensively. So I think he'll probably.
But I thought they were good defensively.
Shortstop was brutal early. Oh, my Lord, it was brutal. Remember the errors early that just cost us? And the fatal. You know, errors are fatal on this team. Now, they don't take that into account, what actually happens.
No.
So. There were so many early on. They were really, I thought, pretty sloppy. And I did think they cleaned it up a little bit towards the end. But, you know, you think about Xander and Kim at short. Both kicked it around a lot. Manny even had a couple of tough ones this year. Jackson Merrill, I'm literally trying to think of a blemish on his record. And that's the one that's escaping me the most, though I know that it did happen. But did you guys see the nominee in the American League? The nominees for right field in the American League. Juan Soto was nominated.
Once again.
Of course.
Who had a horrible, horrible defensive year. I think. Based on everyone tweeting how horrible he was in right field.
Apparently, baseball fans have no good defense looks like.
Crazy.
Because we have, our eyes deceive us when it comes to defensive value, at least based on what the statistical models have come up with.
And when do the winners get announced?
November, I think. All right. After the World Series is over.
All right. Well, nothing we need to be...
Does this hurt Jackson Merrill's Rookie of the Year candidacy, that he's not a Gold Glove nominee? I mean, those votes are already in. So
yeah, they're in. Yep.
All right, Jesse Agler will join us when we come back. We'll wrap up the season. Sad. One last time with Jesse here on a Tuesday.
Super sad.
Coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. I know in the wake of the Padres' loss on Friday, it is hard to remember the good things that happened over the course of the season. Yeah. I would hope as time goes by a little bit, you do remember how many unbelievable moments that the Padres provided this year. It truly was a special and spectacular season. Didn't end the way we wanted it to, but Jesse Agler took us through most of those moments all year long.
Yes, sir.
Here on 97.3 The Fan. He was always good enough to join us almost every single Tuesday morning throughout the season. He is standing by and will join us one more time after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And as Jesse Agler joins us, I know as fans, when the playoffs end, it's very jarring. You're used to watching games every day. You don't know when it's going to come to an end. It's almost easier when your team doesn't make the playoffs. You know it's coming. Hey, regular season ends in 3 weeks, in 2 weeks, in 1 week. It's over. But it's very jarring. Jesse, I can't even imagine when it's your life and your livelihood to have it come to just an abrupt end like that. How do you deal with that, and how jarring is it for you that baseball is just over, like snap of the finger?
Really jarring. It really is. I mean, because, you know, it's like you're doing it every single day, and when you're in the playoffs, you don't ever expect it to end, or I don't. You know, it's like, all right, they're going to figure this out. They're going to win this game, and then it's like, you know, it's not over till it's over, and then it's over, and it's abrupt, as you said, and then it's like, oh, wow. February, Peoria. That's like the next time I'm going to be doing this. And it's a total shock to the system. And it is, it's very unsettling. It really is. You know, I mean, I'm hopeful, obviously, like all of us, that one of these years it's going to end with the Padres, you know, raising a trophy above their heads. And that's going to be a very, very different sensation. But when that doesn't happen, when you're in the postseason, same thing. I remember walking out of Citizens Bank Park 2 years ago after the Phillies, you know, beat the Padres in the NLCS. And I was like zombie walking to the bus, you know, the team bus to go back to the airport and fly home. Like, I just couldn't believe it. And it was like, what just happened? Did that really happen? And it was a very similar sensation the other night in L.A. It really was.
Yeah, man. What was your analysis, Jesse? I love talking baseball with you, and you know, you sit and you watch every game, as do we. And what was your analysis of kind of what happened? I saw, you know, you see a lot of, oh, they're playing hero ball and swinging for the fences and all that stuff. And you know, look, I there's validity, I think, to everyone's opinion right now based on what they saw. But for me, I watched it and I said, I can't believe what I'm actually seeing. You know, this is a different Padres team. For them, their bats to go that ice cold for 24 innings was pretty insane to watch.
You know, one of the things, if you listen to Padre radio, you'll hear Tony and I talk about a lot, because it's one of my sort of go-tos, is that baseball is the cruelest of all the sports. It is a nasty, nasty little animal. And for the Padres to be abandoned by the thing that got them through the long, arduous season in the final 2.5 games of the postseason that they were in is just absurd. You know, I mean, and that's baseball as much as anything else. Like, this was a team defined by their ability to put the ball in play, defined by their ability to get hits, defined by their ability to pass the baton, have the big inning. And for all of that to abandon them, you know, at the end of the playoff run is just awful. You know, I mean, it was just so hard to watch, and so that was jarring, and it was difficult to kind of comprehend. And it's like, how on earth is this happening? And then, you know, kind of step back a day or two later and you go, man, isn't that the most baseball thing ever? You know, why does this team end up losing in the playoffs? Because they weren't able to do the thing that they were able to do better than any other team all summer long, which is crazy. Like, that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And it just, again, it shows you that, you know, this sport is so different than every other sport. I know there's a lot of conversation right now about, oh, should the division series be best of 7 to try and make it a little bit more, you know, fair or even or anything like that. But the reality is, like, best of 7 really doesn't settle it much better than best of 5. In the NBA, which is the easiest example and the most strong example of this, like, the better team wins, I don't know, 80% of the time in the playoffs, something like that. And even higher than that early on, you know, in the earlier rounds of their postseason. In baseball, it's just such much more of a crapshoot, and you don't know why it's necessarily going to turn a certain direction. And as I said, for the Padres to sort of be bounced out because they were unable to do the thing they did better than any other team is just miserably cruel, and so defines this game that we all love.
I think the real cruelty, Jesse, is not necessarily in the outcomes that can be kind of capricious. It's that going forward, you never know really how to fix it when it's something like that, because maybe there is no fix. Maybe they didn't do anything wrong, but the human instinct is, all right, well, let's work on this. You know, we came up short because of this. Let's work on this. And baseball doesn't always work that way. It's not that simple. You know, in basketball, yeah, we didn't shoot free throws well enough. Well, let's work on free throws and shoot them better next season. We'll put more work into that. In baseball, it's just not that simple sometimes, which makes the direction you're supposed to go in the offseason, like, what is it that, you know, was missing from the Padres equation? Because you can't really put your finger on it.
Yeah, no, look, sometimes it's obvious, right? Like, a couple of years ago, they
not
ran out of pitching.
Yeah.
Right. So you say, okay, what are we going to focus on in the offseason? We got to load up on pitching. You know, so sometimes there is sort of a straightforward directive that the game gives you. But yeah, no, I would say with what happened, again, 2.5 games, basically, right, at the end there, that is not something that should be addressed head on. That's just one of those things. Look, there's plenty of work for AJ Preller to do. And the reality is, right, when, you know, they break camp at the end of March and, you know, come to San Diego for opening day next year, it's going to be a very, very different looking roster than this one. That's just the nature of the game. So I think hyper focusing on what went wrong over the course of 24 innings against the Dodgers is not necessarily like the healthy perspective, in my opinion. I don't know that that's sort of the way to approach it. Not that you necessarily want to ignore those failings. You can use them for motivation. You can use them for lesson, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, like, I don't know, like, that to me would not be anything I really thought too much of going into the offseason if I were the person running baseball operations. And thankfully for everybody, I'm not. But, you know, I think you kind of have to take a step back. You have to look at things a little bit more holistically in this standpoint, because it wasn't something obvious like, oh, we ran out of pitching, or, oh, we needed more help in the bullpen. This team was built for this. They were. It was a great roster. It was a great setup. And, you know, sometimes, as we said, the cruelty of baseball rears its head. And, you know, it's an example I've used a couple of different times for a couple of different reasons. But, you know, you just don't know how it's going to go in this sport. And last year, as I've said to you guys before, the Phillies are up 2-0 on the Diamondbacks in the NLCS. They are playing the best baseball you could ever imagine a team playing. And you're like, oh, they're never going to lose again. And they didn't win again. The Diamondbacks came back and knocked them out of the postseason. I'm sure after the Dodgers took game one against the Mets in shutout fashion, and everybody said, oh, three straight shutouts, the Dodgers are never going to allow a run again. Look how great they are. They're unstoppable. Literally first batter of the next game, home run. Second inning of the next game, grand slam. And the Dodgers look much more, you know, human than they did in the previous three contests that they played. So it's just a really hard sport in these small, small, small samples to make any sort of grand proclamations about, unless something is exceedingly obvious, as was the case we said a couple of years ago with the Padres just not having enough pitching to get through it.
The Phillies is a great example, being up 2-0 on the Diamondbacks. It stopped.
Yeah.
It just stopped. Like, it just...
And there was no good reason for it.
There's no reason.
There was no good reason. Yeah.
The Diamondbacks had good pitching. They had a good bullpen. But the Phillies were on the biggest roll, the momentum. It really... I learned more this year about how, again, none of us really know. Trying to prognosticate doesn't make any sense. You would have never thought you'd get to the last two games and not be able to, you know, put the ball in play, expand the zone, things that you haven't really done all season long. That to me just tells you how different playing playoff baseball is. You see what Aaron Judge is going through right now. You see what Shohei Ohtani is going through, unless there's runners on base right now. It is truly, truly baffling. And it's so dumb that we've all dedicated our lives trying to make sense of something that makes no sense. Zero.
No.
You know?
No, it makes it, look, beautifully stupid is the term that I throw around a lot also, right? And like there, you know, it's very easy to say, all right, I think I've got this figured out. But anytime you say that in baseball, the game will smack you in the face and remind you you don't know anything at all. That is a thing that regularly happens in baseball. And look, that's part of the allure.
Yes.
That's part of why we love it, because if it were predictable and it would follow a simple narrative from A to B every time, it wouldn't be compelling, you know, to watch. But look, the more playoff teams there are, the more rounds of the playoffs there are, it's going to become even that much more volatile. So look, once upon a time, pre-1969, right? You said, all right, best team in the American League versus best team in the National League, and whatever it is, it is. And sometimes you got weird ones, you know, like 1960 with the Pirates and the Yankees. Sometimes you got it exactly the way you would expect. Then they added a round of playoffs in 1969, and they added another round of the playoffs in the mid-90s. And now we've got, you know, basically a couple of years under this current system. It's only going to get weirder and more volatile the more it goes out. And look, last year it was the super teams that all got knocked out. You had 300-win teams a season ago. Baltimore, Philly, and Atlanta, none of them made it out of the division series. Two of them, I don't even think, won a game, if I remember correctly. So, like, we got to all just kind of remember this every year. Just, you know, to stop trying to figure that the obvious thing is going to happen, because it rarely does.
Talking to Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres here on 97.3 The Fan. And speaking of the mysteries of baseball, we were just going through the finalists announced for Gold Glove Awards, and the Padres shut out. Not a single nominee in the final three at any position. Even Jackson Merrill didn't get the nod. And if you look at the defensive metrics, Jesse, it's not actually that surprising. The Padres didn't do that well in the, you know, outs above average and defensive runs saved. Yet, I don't know, my eye test tells me that I thought they were a pretty good defensive team. How do you view kind of the defensive performance of the Padres and how the metrics perform or you know, analyze the Padres versus what you see on the field?
Yeah, and who got snubbed, if anybody, in your opinion?
I don't, you know, I mean, look, Manny gets snubbed every year. I think he's the one for me where the metrics never match the eye test, because he's just remarkable. And he makes it look so easy, and he goes out there and make plays that, because I watch every game every night, I know that most guys can't make. So he's the one that's always a little bit weird to me. But outside of that, I would say they were a strong but not exceptional defensive team. You know, I mean, there's obvious, you know, pros and cons around the diamond as you look at it. But I'm not surprised that outside of Machado that there wasn't a Gold Glove finalist on this team. I mean, even when Kim was healthy, especially at the beginning of the year, he really put himself in a hole defensively with the way he played. Xander having to bounce back and forth, plus the injuries, that wasn't easy for him. You know, Cronenworth never really settled at one spot, although I love the way Jake plays on the right side of the infield. But yeah, Merrill, I think, spent the first, I'd call it 4 months of the season, kind of figuring it out on the line, much, much, much better as the year ended. But look, these awards are about the full body of work, you know, not how you performed in the last couple of months. And I think, you know, understandably, Jackson had a pretty big learning curve there. at the beginning. So that doesn't surprise me. Fernando missed a huge chunk of time. So no, I'm not really surprised by any of that, but they weren't a bad defensive team, which is kind of the thing that I want to try and avoid. You know, it's all well and good to be a great defensive team, but as long as you're not bad and you hit the way they hit, you're going to be okay over the course of the season. And that would be kind of my assessment of that.
All right. Well, listen, there's moves to be made. You know, we talked about Ruben Niebla. I think you have to bring Ruben back. He's obviously a favorite of the guys that he's worked with, certainly Jesse. But you know, some of the guys that are out there, I mean, guys like Higgy, you know, that are out there, and you don't know what they're going to cost. You don't know. It's kind of a fool's errand right now because we don't know what the Padres are going to do payroll wise. But in your opinion, who are a couple of those guys you'd love to see back with the squad next year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early for me to wrap my head around that.
Us too. It is. It is. There's no question.
It's really hard, right? I mean, Higgy was incredible. You know, he really, really was. But, like, I haven't looked at the list of free agent catchers. You know, I don't have a sense right now of, like, how close they really think Ethan Salas might be, although I can't imagine, you know, it's an opening day kind of situation for him in 2025. You know, like, once the World Series ends and you kind of get the full understanding of free agency and options and who's in and who's out, you can have a little bit more of a serious conversation about all that. But look, it's going to be very, very different. That's just sort of the nature of it. And, you know, the guys like Peralta and Solano that plugged in and played such huge roles, like, you might need a different version of that next year. That just might be the way it goes. Catcher for most teams is a very volatile kind of never-ending revolving door of change. Unless you've got one of those dudes, and there's really only a handful of them at that position around Major League Baseball. And the other thing I would sort of throw out there and caution is, you know, remember that when the Padres put out their 26-man roster for the wild card, I think about half of those guys, half of them, were not with this team at the start of spring training.
Without.
Or not, you know, on the 40-man roster or expected to be starters. So even, you know, the group that comes to Peoria versus the group that leaves Peoria, versus the group that's there at the All-Star break, versus the group that's there after the trade deadline, versus the group that's there at the start of the postseason. I mean, there's going to be so much change there. So that's why it feels like, you know, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, trying to figure out now, you know, what it's going to look like at the start of camp, because it's a living, breathing thing, the major league roster and the 40-man program. There's going to be an awful lot of change, an awful lot of time.
All right.
Like a man that doesn't have to do a 4-hour talk show every day.
That's exactly what that sounds like to me.
Quickly, before you go, Jesse, other than reacquaint yourself with your family, any other goals, plans for the offseason that you can share with us?
Yeah. Are you going to come into spring training in the best shape you've ever been? Are you like 10 pounds of muscle? What are we talking about here?
So, yeah, we got to get the physical fitness back on track.
Yes.
We'll be heading out at about a half an hour to restart that journey, because it. During the playoffs, they've got real bad real quick.
It's so bad. So fast.
That's so bad. So, yeah, family obviously is number one, and then that would be number two. And, yeah, just try and recharge a little bit. I mean, every year it's like as soon as the season ends, I feel like I could sleep, you know, and hibernate like a bear. But the funny thing is after a couple of weeks, I start to miss it. And, you know, by the time New Year's rolls around, I'll be chomping at the bit. So,
do you like to go on vacation at all? I mean, you travel so much with your job. Do you like, I don't want to go anywhere between,
I want to be home.
You know, October and February.
I do not love traveling for leisure. Yeah. Because as you said, it's all airplanes, buses and hotel rooms the entire summer. So but obviously with the family, you know, we try and do something. We haven't done a big trip in a couple of years, but my sister and her husband moved to London, so we're kind of kicking that around a little bit. Maybe go visit them.
Yeah, fun time.
Although with an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, I don't know how wise that would be. So we'll see. We're trying to figure it out right now.
All right, Jesse. Thank you so much.
Stay in touch,
on
buddy.
On behalf of the Tier 1s as well.
We love
for
you,
all
man.
The Tuesdays. Everyone really appreciated it. I know you have to get up and do this with us, but rest assured that we are all very happy to have you on each week, and hope you enjoy your off season and don't be a stranger.
Now, the pleasure is mine, guys. I always love chatting with you and your listeners. And just like a big thank you to all the fans who tune in on the radio. You know, I don't think we have this kind of love around baseball for most of the radio broadcasts. And you guys are a big part of why I think we're appreciated the way we are. And So thankful to you guys, thankful to the station, and as I said, to everybody who listens, even if it's just when you're stuck in your car and you're aggravated at the traffic. We love that everybody joins us as much as they do. So thank you to everybody who listens. Really appreciate you guys.
Thank you, buddy.
He's the man, Jesse
Try
Adler.
Not to cry in here on a Tuesday morning here.
It's emotional. Right. We'll it's always sucks when it ends.
Take a quick timeout. Top of the hour. Paulie's got some headlines. Big breaking news. Trade in the NFL and the Ryan Report.
Yes.
Coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan.